culture questions only one podcast knows. Nerds That Know, Rated R.
The greatest minds from around the world. This is the Nerds That Know. Stash here along with my wonderful cohort of friends, family, and fellow nerds. Please, everyone, how have you been?
Oh, Stash, that was like the sweetest intro you've ever done.
You forgot roommates.
That's true, but I figure that's under family.
We're friend.
Or friend.
I don't know. Same household. I would go with family.
Strictly yeah. Roommates.
Nope. or just co-host. You know what, Fox? You're just the co-host then. Fine. You're no one's friend.
You know what? Stash brought me tacos today, so we are a family.
There you go. Yay! Opa.
If that's not love, I don't know what is.
I don't either. But let's get right to it. Want to talk about Crazy Love? Let's talk about The Boys Season 2, motherfuckers.
Oh, okay, really? Really?
Yes,
really? That's your segue?
Yes, it is, because... Have you finished The Boys?
Are you kidding? Stormfront looks like a bris laying
it's
there.
It's so funny! It's hilarious.
It is.
It's the funniest thing ever. And then the fact she reverted to German.
German? Yes.
So happy.
It was like, oh my god, that was a perfect way to end that story arc. I was like, oh my god, that is just perfect.
No, right. She's not a Nazi. What?
What?
It was. I was like shocked.
The color of your skin, and I mean that whole genocide speech she gave the kid. And then her ass handed to her, I was like, oh my god. Even Homelander, who's absolutely out of touch with the world, even looked at her like, what the hell are you talking about?
Yeah.
When Homelander thinks you've gone off the deep end, you're off the motherfucking deep end.
Oh yeah.
I feel like that's a pretty good standard to have.
Oh yeah. It was terribly good. I will say that character arc ended in such a satisfying way and really was, in my opinion, the highlight of the season finale.
I don't know. I liked the chick fight when they had all of the women just going at Stormfront.
That was
really, really Smurf liked the chick fight? Who here is surprised?
No, it wasn't really anything like sexual, but it's like all the women like got together and just handed Stormfront her ass.
It was a serious ass kicking.
It was.
I wouldn't even call it a chick fight. I would call it a woman fight.
Okay.
There was no hair pulling. There was no scratching. Like it was
hair pulling. There was hair pulling.
It was not a bitch fight. It was a female inclusive fight. It was a woman on woman fight. It was not a chick fight.
All right.
It was an ass whooping. That's what it was.
Tank, you are not incorrect.
Fresh can of whoop ass served up.
All right. So, how do we all feel about the resolution of the season and all?
Well.
Go ahead.
I was gonna say I'm already ready for season 3.
Yeah. I mean, it tees up season 3 perfectly. I'm excited to see Soldier Boy come in. I don't know. I mean, it was just and to finally get like the final piece of who's been popping people's heads was even better. I mean, that was just candy. That was just so tasty. I was like, oh. You're kidding me. And it made total sense, too.
It absolutely did. Like,
but it wasn't what I expected.
Well, yeah, me either.
No one expected that.
Which is what I liked. Is because it wasn't expected. I mean, yes, makes sense. But no, not expected. because so many shows nowadays are so fracking predictable.
Yes.
Right? That it's just, it's boring. And I was not bored. I was, like, I wanted to find out what was going to happen. I wanted to know what was coming next. I want to know what's happening next. I'm ready for season three. I'm ready to keep going. I'm not bored with this season. I'm not bored with this show. Which
everybody involved with The Boys actually stopped and acknowledged Amazon and said, thank you for letting us do this, for not censoring us, for letting the story run its course, because everybody has just been singing the praises of the series, of the storyline, of the entire thing. And want more. More, more, more.
I mean, I absolutely agree. I do feel like it is a very, very well done series. I felt, I don't know, this resolution I felt was too, like, good. I wanted more bad shit to happen right at the end. But, I don't know, it felt so soft. Like, the ending felt soft. I wanted something, like, more graphic. But I will never forget the last image of Homelander zooming out on season two.
But I think that's what sets it up. That's, it just pulls you into that illusion that everything, oh, look, everything's rainbows and unicorns. You know, everyone's frolicking in the grass. It's a better, shinier world when it's so far from the truth, because everything's really about to go off the rails.
Oh, yeah.
I agree with you completely. Yeah,
you can tell that at the end. Like, they're just setting everything up for the big fall. But mm-hmm. I wish we just had a few more hints. And I wanted one person beyond Stormfront to have something bad happen.
I did too. I was waiting for, like, some reveal with the Fresca. I was waiting for something with Deep. I was waiting. I mean, A-Train, I was waiting for his heart to go like a baked potato. I mean, I really was waiting for someone more to eat shit, but I don't know.
Yeah, there wasn't nearly as many main character Kaplooies as I was expecting.
Well, I don't know. I mean, we Stormfront got nailed pretty good. Noir is out for who knows how long. The one speedster that was going to replace A-Train, his head went. So
yeah, but I wouldn't call the new guy, like, a main character.
He was going to be.
He was. I mean, he was kind of set up.
Yeah, but he was kind of written in just as a guy to die.
He was cannon fodder? Is that what you're saying?
Yes. Yes.
All right.
Like, were we ever even, like, actually supposed to be like, oh, hey, he's really going to be... Nope. Nope, he's not.
Oh, no. I mean, there were casualties that I wasn't expecting. But, ooh. I don't know. I'm without giving any spoilers away, because I don't know who hasn't watched the final episode, so I don't want to completely ruin anything.
Well, because the final episode did just come out a week ago.
Friday.
Yeah. Well, a couple of days ago then. Yep. Last week, whatever. It's all blurs day to me.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, it's one of those things, like, one of the things I really love about The Boys in general is there are so many great little one-liners and things that makes this show just feel authentic.
Don't forget what I told you. Don't be a cunt.
That was an amazing line.
Oh my god, that was just beautiful. Oh, I don't know, there's just something funny about old men and children cussing. I don't know what it is.
I don't know, I think that old ladies cussing is also quite amusing. I think just old people and children.
Old people.
What? Best part of Lake Placid was Betty White. Wasn't that that Lake Placid?
Yep, you are correct, sir.
Yeah. Old lady swearing.
Yep.
I think the best part of almost every Betty White movie is Betty White.
Lessing off a long scene of obscenities. Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Because, you know, she's fucking Betty White and, like, is older than sliced bread.
Oh, my God. She, the maid from Two and a Half Men passed away today, and she was only 77. So Betty White just keeps on going.
Seriously, Betty White is literally older than sliced bread.
Yep.
Gosh bless.
Oh, my.
Not surprisingly, she outlived Eddie Van Halen.
Yes. Yes.
Too soon. Too soon.
Was that a surprise? I mean, really?
No.
Well, what he did to his body for 30 years, is it a surprise that, you know, something went wrong?
No, but at the same time, hasn't this year taken enough from us already?
Clearly not.
It's only October.
Yeah, I know.
Story on that. So Eddie Van Halen blamed his cancer that he got from holding his metal and copper picks in his mouth, because he got the cancer like right in the same spot that he held it like in his lips and right there on his teeth. So later his life progressed, he had that removed, he had part of his tongue removed because of cancer. So he blames his pick, not his lifestyle.
Not the massive amount of drugs, alcohol, and
heavy partying,
anonymous sex with weed, everybody.
Yeah.
None of those things had a factor in it.
True story.
And on that note, kids, make sure to not put weird shit in your mouth or to, you know, wrap it when you go with strange. And that is your PSA today from the Nerds That Know.
All right. So I actually have a pretty good tangent here, but I don't know if you guys are going to follow it. Have any of you guys watched Utopia yet?
Not yet. Well, actually, no. I watched the first episode.
Zootopia?
No.
Utopia.
Yeah, I wish.
Utopia is a new series that just premiered on Amazon Prime. And boy, do I have to tell you, I have never seen a series that tries so hard to do what The Boys do unsuccessfully.
Oh, really?
It's basically like a weird version of, God, I can't even think of anything quite like it. I guess kind of like The Page Master?
I was going to say Cloverfield Lane.
I honestly haven't seen that film, so...
Okay.
The Page Master. The one where the books came to life? That Page Master?
Where the stories are kind of, like, interconnected with our reality and such. And, like, that's the entire premise of it. And I gotta tell you, it really sucks, man. I mean, I made it a decent way through it. Like, I want to say I made it through, like, 6 or 7 episodes because I was stuck at home, unable to leave because I was sick. And eventually it just got to this point where I was just like, I am not watching any more of this. And I just turned it off. But I think it's really interesting because I think Amazon is seeing such success with The Boys that they want to kind of reapply that model, the really graphic violence and the really heavy subject matter. They want to reapply it to other series that they're creating, and I think that's exactly what Utopia was attempting to do, and I don't think it did so successfully. I mean, I'm not saying it's like the worst thing I've ever seen, but when compared to The Boys, you can really see where it's drawing from that source and trying to do something in a very different way. But like, there's a torture scene in like the first or second episode, and it's like there's all sorts of killing and kind of gratuitous violence like The Boys, but there isn't a really interesting plot in the background. Like,
so there's no reason for the violence. It's just torture for the sake of torture.
I mean, yes, there's okay. this guy's trying to find a book, and he tortures anyone who has seen it. Tortures and or kills anyone who has seen it. And, like, it just started to the point where I quit. It just started going off the rails about this weird, like, religious cult that's also a science cult that's also about biological terrorism. It's super weird, man. It is a weird ass show, and I will say the weirdness of it is what kept me going for as long as it did. Because, like, I legit would have no idea what was going to happen the next episode. And then, like, the main, I guess, yeah, I would call her the main protagonist, is, like, this, mentally disabled, I want to say schizophrenic, homeless girl who just kind of squats on certain places and is trying to track down something. I'm trying to not go into spoilers too much, but it is
a, I think you kind of already spoiled it for everybody by saying it absolutely sucks.
No, that's an opinion. That is my opinion, and it is in no way an absolute fact. It is just how I feel about it. And there's no real... Yeah, there is no real details about the plot or anything that I've gone into. It's just, it's so many things thrown at the wall to just see what sticks that, like, I think they could pull out certain elements of it and make a really interesting story, but they tried to force so much into it that it's just, it's too much. And I was really curious to see if anyone would talk about it, but as far as I know, it's like skated under the radar, where honestly I think it's just so weird and confusing that people watch maybe one, maybe two episodes and they're like, all right, I'm done with this show.
So we're anticipating no season two.
I don't know, because Amazon Prime has shown that they're willing to invest in a second season when there doesn't necessarily warrant another one. I mean, the, oh my god, how can I not think of that show? The really good, space opera that they have.
Expanse?
Yes, thank you. Like, the third season of that was very likely to be the last, because it just didn't have the viewership. But they were willing to continue it, and now they're on their fifth season, and it's a very beloved series. But this is something that's very different, and is this from anything? Do you know, Smurf?
I don't remember seeing this in anything media-wise, so as far as I know, it's its own creation. It kind of seems like a really weird mishmash and an amalgamation of, like, Twilight Zone and the guy who did I Am Legend. I can't think of his name at the moment.
It's been a long time since I read those books, so I can't remember.
Anyway, but yeah, it just seems like they're pulling from every weird, quirky sci-fi source that they can to create this narrative. So,
all right, so it actually is a remake.
Not in the remake sense, but kind of. I mean, there's no new original idea.
No.
I think it's honestly just kind of how strange can we make it.
So, according to IMDb, there was a 2013 Utopia.
Yeah, British.
That was a British TV series.
Black comedy and science fiction.
And so this is the U.S. version, and everybody knows the U.S. version of a U.K. show is never as good.
Oh.
I don't know, I got a lot of people that would argue with you on The Office on that point, but okay, I'll go with it.
And they would be wrong.
The American version of The Office is better than the U.K. version. Come on now.
No, it's not. You just don't understand British humor.
Wow. No,
Wow, that's shots a pretty hard fired.
Yeah.
Oh, apparently it was.
Look, he's my brother-in-law. I don't have to be nice to him.
David Fincher was supposed to be the showrunner. But he's not. It was supposed to be on HBO, but David Fincher is the showrunner.
Oh. Okay.
Well,
that put interesting statement on where it should have gone, maybe.
Yeah. It couldn't have been any more random than it currently is. But, I mean, I will say there are a lot of IPs that are originally slated for other streaming services and they end up on Amazon Prime.
This is true. Like
the last result.
Yeah, and they kind of pick up numbers left over. So, yeah.
Yeah, and I really feel that this was one of those situations. Honestly, I would say pass, but it's so weird and so confusing and so kind of dumb at times that it's almost worth watching a few episodes of.
No, that's what you said about Sharknado. Oh, no, it's not. You actually like that.
Well, Cusack is in it.
Yes, and I love Cusack. Like, seriously, yeah. I adore that man. I think he's incredibly talented.
Agreed.
And I may watch it just for him.
I may look at it just because you said it's so weird. It's worth at least watching the first episode to see how weird it is.
Yeah. I mean, I would be very curious to get you guys' opinion next week, next show.
Okay.
If you did.
I'll have it done by then. Mm-hmm. I was distracted by other more impressive shows.
Well, there are certainly a deluge of those, so.
Yes, and let's go on to one of those now. Fox and Stash have been apparently looking at a number of things that they sent over. Haunting of Bly Manor, as well as Ratched. Which one are we going to first, folks?
Oh my god, I am... Do we want to, like, start on a good note and end on a bad note, or vice versa?
Well, we're already on a sour note, so let's just stay there.
Okay, yeah,
always
so let's talk about Ratched. I don't know if any of you guys watched it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I am so sorry if you enjoyed it and this is going to make you sad, but I think it's garbage.
Wow, you're going full-on garbage on this.
Okay, so I will say Sarah Paulson is a national treasure. She's the best part about it, obviously. But, like, the first episode I saw when I was in Nashville visiting family, and me and my two sisters watched the first episode, and it finished, and we looked at each other and we were like, so what did you think of that? I think that it is, the writing can be very contrived, a lot like in American Horror Story. Unlike American Horror Story, I feel like it doesn't have so many, like, weird, loose plot threads that don't really go anywhere as much as American Horror Story did. But much like American Horror Story, I never know what anyone's motivations are, what they want. I'm always, like, kind of confused. And then, like, it's kind of just, like, horrible to be horrible sometimes. And by horrible, I mean, like, graphically violent or, like transgressive in ways. So, like, those moments feel kind of contrived. But, yeah, what do y'all think about it?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to say garbage. I would say that your comparisons to American Horror Story are a lot of the reasons that people love this show is because it's a lot like American Horror Story. It doesn't always make sense. It is, you know, kind of random, and it is a very similar feel. You know, my favorite part of the whole thing is really the way the costuming and the lighting and everything is done, because I feel like you can get more out of a scene by how they're doing the lighting and the costuming than from anything anyone is actually saying.
Yeah, and, like, they did some really cool things with the lighting.
But that's my theater nerd coming out, just talking about, like, oh my god, the, you know, like, the props mistress and the costume people were really, like, on point with this one.
Yeah, and the costuming is great. I'm just like,
was like my happy on this show was the costuming, because like it looks like the people who were working on that had their shit together.
It's certainly fun to look at.
I'm actually going to side with Fox on this. I liked American Horror Story. Actually, I liked all the seasons of American Horror Story. They tried too hard to be American Horror Story. With completely disconnected characters and the same actress.
Yeah.
That it doesn't... It's unnecessary. At least that's my perspective of it. A lot of the story is unnecessary. With American Horror Story, it's hard to feel out a lot of what's happening for big stretches of time, but they always give you bits and pieces to connect to things. Gradually seem disconnected. They seem to lose things as the story's progressing instead of gaining more information.
Yeah. And, like, so maybe I'm just, like, I don't like gore very much. I can't really handle much of it. So there were definitely some parts where I had to kind of, like, cringe and get through it in order to watch the rest of the show. And I'm sure that for people who like gore and all of the special effects and the makeup and everything, that was very cool for them. But for me, I'm just like, this is, like, there's no reason. It just feels like they're being gory just to be gory. Like, it really doesn't feel like it adds anything to the story for me. I don't know.
I would agree with you. It's gore for the sake of gore, which is not really the... I love slasher flicks. I don't mind a little bit of gore. I don't like, you know, if you want to throw a decapitation or two in, cool. You know, that's fine. But it's unnecessary. It's simply, it seemed like they were doing gore just to be outrageous. It didn't seem like it made any sense to the story. Aspects of it.
I remembered one other point that I was going to bring up, and I think that this show really tries to say something about, you know, being LGBT, especially in the 50s, you know, and I think it tries to say something very profound about it, but I think it really misses the mark and just ends up making, like, you know, like, sad torture porn for the straight people. Like, I just really think that they did a bad job.
Interesting.
Okay. Anyone else have any perspectives on Ratched?
I've not watched it, so no.
Okay, then let's go to the happy note then, Fox. What do you have to say about The Haunting of Bly Manor?
Oh my god, it's so good. Stash and I, we sat down to watch the first episode, and thank god this was a Friday night, because we just binge the whole thing from start to finish in one night.
It was so good, and I'm so happy that that's like how we ended up viewing it, because I do feel like it is a show that benefits from like binging quite a lot.
Yeah,
because the tension is just so good, and then
and the investment in the characters.
Mm-hmm. And then the plot, like, Fox and I always, we did this with the Haunting on Hill House, of Hill House, and we did it with this. We sat down and discussed the episodes during, like, episode breaks, or whenever I would grab the remote and pause it and just bring up a few things, and that discussion really does add so much, especially on a incredibly well-written suspense driven story like this.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to watch it with a friend and like talk about your theories about what you think is happening. That's one thing that I think that Haunting of Bly Manor does so well, is that up until probably like the 3/4 mark of the season, you don't really know what's going on. But like I think that they did that well, a lot better than Ratched. Where, like, everything still made sense, even though I couldn't, like, place exactly what was happening or like where it was going. And it, like, the acting is amazing. There's a lot of really fantastic actors. I am in love with the Cook character. What is his name? Owen. Oh, I'm in love with him.
Yes, we are well aware of your love. I don't know why I pluralized myself, but I am very aware of your love.
You know, the royal we.
Yeah, that's true. The royal we. But no, I firmly agree with everything you said, and I was shocked at how often you correctly anticipated the direction of the plot. But it was, oh my god, I've never seen a show that just does tension in quite this great of way. Because there are shows that have more tension, but there aren't shows that, like, have a build up of tension, then a steady fall, and then a rebuild up in every episode and split between the episodes. The use of tension in this show was just phenomenal.
And it's not very scary. Like, there are a couple of scary parts. Like, I would say that Haunting of Hill House was actually scarier, but this one, I think, has a lot more tension, and it's like, at one point, Stash and I, like, turned to each other between episodes, and I was like, hey, am I crazy, or is this season better than last season?
And you were absolutely correct in saying it was, because I do firmly believe the writing, the subject matter, the way everything was told was just so well done in this one. It was a lot more refined, but it was also distant enough from one that it didn't feel like they were rehashing the same subject matter.
Yeah. I was going to bring up that it got a little hokey toward the end. Like you said, there were like three endings. Like, I don't know why they needed to do that many. There's like a wedding scene where, you know, all of the characters from the show are supposed, they're there at the wedding, but they're older. And for some reason, they just picked whatever actor. Like, the mom from Haunting of Hill House is in this one as the lady, one of the main characters in the future, if that makes sense. And they're like all together at this wedding, and like, their older versions look nothing like the original actors. Like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, I have to laugh at it. It's so bad.
It definitely is. And that casting of your character, your loves, Owen's, like, older self. Like, I almost didn't recognize who he was trying to be, because it was so bad.
I know, just put some old makeup on it. Or, like, you know, if you have to keep the mom from last season, like, fine, cast her as a different character and put some old makeup on the character from, like, the other part of the show. Like, you know, and the Owen grown-up, it's like they couldn't find any other Pakistani actors to be his older self. They were just like, well, this is the only other Pakistani guy we can find. Actually, I don't know if he's Pakistani or Indian, but
I'm not sure entirely. I think he might be Indian, though. It would make sense considering the setting and how many people immigrate from India to the UK.
Pakistan, too. They have a lot of Pakistani immigrants.
Yeah, well, it could be either one. But regardless, like, that casting was just awful. And so, too, was the narrator, the mother from Hill House. Like, she just did not fit the character she was designed to portray.
Oh my god, and she didn't even have the same accent as her younger self. Oh.
So she pulled a Madonna? Is that what you're saying?
It's sure. Yes. like I was saying, like, maybe it was in her contract that she had to be in season two, but, like, find a different place to put her, because this was not the right place.
I think she's just such a lead actress that they wanted to put her in something major, even if that wasn't where she should have gone.
Yeah, I mean, she definitely carries like a like this dignified older woman air in that part. She does a good job of that. I was going to mention that the dad from Haunting of Hill House is in it too. And I don't know if I bought his performance in Hill House, and I still don't think I buy it in Bly Manor.
I mean, I don't know. I would say it's better in Bly Manor, but it's also vastly reduced in Bly Manor. And I think that's the more important thing, because I don't feel like he's the right character to have front and center.
Yeah. I think that's all I had to say about that.
Okay.
What else we got?
All right. Well, something that Tank and I were talking about was the killing joke on the Batman movie that's out on Netflix.
Yeah.
So this is the Joker movie. Has anybody else watched it?
I don't know. When I watched it, I don't know if I really felt much of the comic coming through. I was just kind of like, I don't know. It just felt meh.
Unnecessary. It felt unnecessary.
Yeah.
There was too much exposition to the story. They were bringing up parts of the story that didn't add context. It seemed like it was just to increase its playtime.
Yeah.
Especially in the first, like, I'd say half an hour. Seemed unnecessary.
Yeah. I'd even go almost 45 minutes, almost an hour, where that was just so unnecessary. Like, really? Why?
Yeah. They added a lot of unnecessary background to it, it seemed like, and I love the storyline. I mean, even though, you know, big chunks of it have been retconned and everything like that, it was still an amazing story for the time. And it was, you know, it's still the comic book is intriguing and draws people in and tells an interesting story. This movie was not that. This was exposition just to hear Kevin Conroy talk more, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, the voice acting cast was good.
Well, yeah, because it's everybody. I mean, we got Mark Hamill, we got Kevin Conroy, we got the principal people back.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Tara Strong is Barbara. It's great, great casting. The casting's fine. It's story boring.
I don't remember. Did he tell the joke that he told at the end of the book in the movie?
Yeah, he still told the joke, but did the whole, you know, it only takes one bad day, you know, the whole everything like that, but it's still
being as impactful, though, because it wasn't in the comic. It was just like, wow, but yeah, I don't remember it having as much a punch in the movie, so much that I forgot even if they had done it.
Well, Matt, I think that plays. I think that's partially because of how much unnecessary bullcrap was just shoved into the story.
Mm-hmm.
You get bored. It's boring and boring and boring, and you're like, oh, okay. Oh, it's something finally interesting. But then by the time it gets interesting, you're kind of like, I don't really want to watch this anymore. Because you're ruining a story that I actually enjoy at this point.
Mm-hmm. And I blind bought this one, of course. It released day on there. I buy the box set that comes with the little special figure that comes, you know, with the collector edition. Felt stupid for doing that.
Well, it's all right. Just put it next to your Samurai Jack, and then you'll feel better.
Samurai Jack! Love that
game. Thanks for that, Bobby. That's appreciated.
Love that game.
It hadn't been brought up in, like, almost 48 hours.
It's okay. I got something to distract me. The G.I. Joe game came out, so...
Wow, no one gives two fucks about that.
Hey, I like G.I. Joe.
Not true.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody's on about this game. Everybody.
You mean like you and like two of your friends?
No, actually.
Like, that's right. That's not true. Smurf doesn't have two friends.
Nope.
That is accurate. I mean, like, friends as in Xbox Online friends. That's what I mean.
No, I got more than two, maybe three.
You have six.
I have six.
But only two of them are about, you know, this trash fire that is G.I. Joe game.
This is not a trash fire. It's an awesome kind of like the art from Borderlands and the first Transformers game that was based on the cartoon, and you get to play like all these different characters. I'm excited to play it. Fuck off. All
right, so it is based on, the new game is based on the cartoon?
Yes, not the shitty comic book or the crappy movie.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because the cartoons were awesome, because knowing is half the battle.
Yes, it's based on that. Also, you get, like, different skins for different characters. Destro, Baroness.
Who do you get to play? Which characters do you get to play?
All of them.
Yes!
It should be.
There's, like, 12 or 13 different characters. They only named, like, four or five. So, I'm not sure who all is in it yet. Because I haven't played it yet. Just came out today.
Well, this sounds completely awesome. I would like a full report next show.
Yep, and I'll add it with, you know, a comparison to, like, say, Samurai Jack!
Did you get any figurines with this one?
That game is so good.
That game is very good. That game is so well produced. That game
yeah.
is
good. In terms of, like, a, I guess, TV adaptation game, I don't know if there's many better ones.
No, for the gameplay and what you get and all the characters. I mean, even having all the voice actors back. I mean, even Rob Paulsen, who does Wacko Warner, does the voice for the dog in it. I mean, they brought all the actors back. I mean, of course, they couldn't bring back Aku because, well, he's dead. But, I mean, everybody else is in there, so.
Yeah. I mean, you can only do what you can do, so...
Yeah, you only can do what you can do. And you know what's even better playing that video game? Is looking at my Samurai statue sitting right there on top of my Xbox.
Oh, I'm sure it's just great. I'm sure that it is. But you know what else is great?
What's that?
Not being you.
Okay. So moving past that epic burn, and since Smurf mentioned, Yakko Warner, has anybody watched any of the previews of the new Animaniacs?
Yes.
I watched, like a 2-minute video, something like that.
Was it a Jurassic Park ripoff?
Yes.
Yes, it was.
Yes, that's the new trailer.
Okay.
And thoughts?
Okay, so my phone has been lost for a few days, and so I did not get the link to the article that there was a new Animaniacs trailer, and this is the first that I'm hearing of it, and oh my god, that's fucking awesome.
Yes, so dinosaur dick jokes can come back, Fox, because there was a Jurassic Park, whole spiel from Animaniacs.
Oh my god, yes! But wait, like, is it uncouth to do that with Animaniacs? Because is it, like, technically a children's cartoon?
Was it ever?
There's no.
I mean, I will always refer back to the fingerprints comment.
Oh my god, yeah! Oh, I forgot about that.
Okay, so whenever anybody calls Animaniacs a children's show, I will just pull that little card out my pocket and be like, really? Really? That's a children's show? So that's my thought on that matter.
Well, and I'm curious to see, because so even though they brought everybody back for the Animaniacs, they did not bring back the original writing staff or the creator of the Animaniacs.
Really? Yes, so we have the original voices, but not the original creative team.
Correct. So everyone is back, except for them. And the creator's a little pissed off. I mean, I read an article just the other day about how upset he is, you know, because they make the joke in there, because Steven Spielberg, of course, is in the Jurassic Park spoof, playing the Hammond role of, I spared no expense, I brought everybody back. And he took that as a personal insult, like, fuck you, fucker, you didn't bring us back, and we created the damn thing. So he's not too happy about that whole go-around. I thought the trailer was spectacular and hit me, like, right in the perfect spot for the warm feels. Absolutely.
I am very excited about this reboot. Yep. Like, there have been some reboots that I was not overly thrilled about. This is one that I am very excited for.
So. And it'll be in a couple weeks on Hulu.
Yeah, they really know how to get millennials right in the feels.
So, I'm just wondering what kind of new songs we're going to have from Yakko Warner, because I can still sing The Nations of the World.
The whole thing?
Yes. I have mad skills.
Prove it one of these days.
You know what? We'll go do karaoke, and I will sing Nations of the World.
Okay, sounds good.
My mom was trying to do this whole geography thing for her kindergartners, and so I had to do, at the school I was going to at the time in D.C., you are required to do a certain number of community service hours to pass from one grade level to the next. In addition to passing all of your classes, you also have to do community service. And so I would take a day off of school, you know, each quarter and go do my community service hours at my mom's school. Because she worked at a special needs school. And so while she was doing the, you know, globe and, you know, geography of the world spiel for her kindergartners, I learned that song so I could sing it to them as part of my community service.
Oh my God, that's adorable.
That is one of those things that sticks with you. But yeah, because at the school that I went to, community service was required to move from one grade to the next.
For every grade?
For every grade.
Huh. I mean, that's cool. I had to do, 20 hours of community service to graduate high school. But...
No, it was like, 24 hours of community service for just getting out of 8th grade.
Wow. I think that's really cool, actually.
You know, and it's like that many, you know, like, per each year. And I think it goes up, you know, as you advance throughout the high school and whatnot. But, yeah. That's DC.
That's weird. I would have hated it because I was already working at that time. So...
In 8th grade?
9th grade.
Really?
Yeah.
Who let you have a job?
My parents required I have a job before I could get my license.
I asked that on a daily basis for him.
I don't know, man. Now, I wouldn't let me do shit.
Wait, you had a job when you were 14?
15. I was held back a year.
Worker's permit?
Nope.
Oh, wow.
Under the table until I could be paid over the table.
Wow.
And now he dances on the table.
Dirty.
Accurate.
It had to be said. All right. Well, speaking of Stash and his dirty, weird fetishes, let's talk about Jim Butcher and the newest Dresden book.
Oh, that's a weird transition.
Well, you know what? It's the best I got, because, you know.
You know, I would fuck the shit out of Map, though. Oh, gotta love a girl who hurts you.
You do have a thing for that.
That is true. Well...
We just need to get Monster's phone number and have her come out from Vegas for a couple of days.
Sure. Sounds good to me. So, Bobby, what's the verdict from you?
I'm ready for the next book.
Well, I mean, that's how he writes. And these are the last of the case books, and they are start. His next book will be the first of the Apocalypse trilogy.
Right, and I know that. Although, so I don't really feel like these are case books.
We have three more Dresden file books, and that is it.
And I get that, but I don't feel like these are really case books. This is not a case.
Well, I mean, it's considered the last of the case books.
No, and I get that, but it just, like, and they're being called that because it's still Dresden Files and blah, 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 but it's not a case. Like, this is, hey, we have to save a whole motherfucking city.
I mean, that's very true, and, like, this is the culmination of so much. Like, that's just what I felt from this series, from this book specifically, was at last, everything is finally starting to resolve. We're finally seeing the things that we've been scared of happening. We finally see Dresden come into his own. I'm doing that without spoilers. I'm sure you get the gist of it.
I understand what you're saying.
Maybe you don't because you haven't finished the book yet.
I'm two chapters away.
I know, but the last two chapters are pretty intense. But it's very, very good. I honestly wasn't sure how this book would be, considering what the last one was, but I was very pleasantly surprised and enjoyed the hell out of reading it.
The character development and the way that everything is arcing here, you know, is just... Jim Butcher has this way of, like, just getting you so engrossed in his story that you kind of just, like, forget everything else that's happening. You know, like, for me anyway, like, I'm so involved in what's happening in the book that sometimes I'm like, oh, shit, I've been doing this for, like, 3 hours. You know, because I also reread Peace Talks.
I did as well.
Before starting Battleground, and...
Yeah, I had to. Because they're just the way the end of Peace Talks happens, like, I needed to refresh that. And it took me a day and a half to finish Peace Talks, and I finished this last one in one day. It was a long day, and I didn't work, but I read the entire fucking book in one day.
Well, when you're at home, sick, on the couch, and not doing anything, it's a lot easier to get through an entire book in a day.
That is incredibly accurate.
Yeah. But
I was shocked at how well done, like, this book was. How it concluded so many floating plot points, and the few points that are left, I'm really curious to see where they go. There's one thing in particular that you're not to quite yet, but that really has me curious.
Well,
because at last we see, like, Dresden really come to his own, and this is the first time I've actually felt that he has really aged and matured a lot.
All right, well, I have felt that a couple of times with him, you know?
No, the Skin Game is the book where I first really felt that, but this time, like, you actually see that, along with everything he's encountered since then, forcing a level of maturity and evolution that really pay off in a satisfying way. And you see it in the way, like, you've seen it in the way he interacts with Murphy. Because you've definitely gotten through that point.
And, oh, yeah.
Like, you just see how he is willing to accept what has happened to her and who she is and the struggle of who she is. And, like, he understands that he needs to do things he doesn't necessarily want to do to protect those he cares about in a non-physical way. And, like, the maturity that he demonstrates is just, it really excites me for the last three, and it really makes me sad because I can see the inklings of the ending now.
I'm wondering what Butcher is going to do next, and whether or not we're going to have another character that we're going to connect with as much as we have with everyone in the Dresden Files.
I don't know, because I think now we're going to see the reduction of characters, not the enhancement of characters.
No, and I get that. That's because that's what you do at the end.
Yeah, and I will say, like, in this last book, Odin's character, I'm not going to say any more than that. His character was just incredibly... Tank, we're getting background noise from you again.
Yeah, I'm sorry, one second.
It's fine. His character was incredibly well maintained through this series, through these last couple of books, but this one in particular, you really see, like, who he is and what he has become. And I listened to a couple of interviews with him discussing Odin and his portrayal of him, and it was very interesting to get his take and, like, to see that represented in this last book so well.
Well, one of the things I really like about Dresden in general is he takes so many things that are common in mythology and in, you know, in so much with folklore, and he puts...
You mean Butcher?
What did I say?
Dresden.
That's what I meant. I get those two mixed up in my brain sometimes, because they just melded.
Yeah.
So with Butcher, is like he takes all of these things, and he puts this unique spin on them, you know, into a way that I hadn't thought to look at them before. You know, and he's just expanded that palette, I think. You know, so it's no longer just the world of Fae. But it's gone into such a larger, you know, especially over the last, I think, 4 or 5 books. You know, really, when we started getting into the war with the Red Court.
Yeah, I was thinking the Splattercon is where he really did a great job of modernizing myths and taking myths from every direction. And I think he's done an exceptional job, and this series concluding is going to be quite tragic.
I agree, but I also think that it's better for it to conclude to a natural ending than for him to keep going in a forced manner.
Oh, I completely agree. I'm looking forward to a satisfying, well-resolved ending, and Butcher has done this before with his Codex Altera series, and I feel like that series ended when it needed to.
You know, I am wondering if he's going to do any kind of spin-offs, though, because he has put so much energy into developing so many of these characters, and, you know, characters beyond just Dresden have become such... like, major players. You know, if there's anyone who could, you know, potentially have their own thing.
I don't know. It's really curious. I know Thomas is, like, the one person I see really continuing in an interesting way, but...
And I just adore him anyway.
I figured you would.
Look, I appreciate the fact that he is willing to control his demon for love. Okay? Plus, he's a hairdresser.
That is true. I'm not sure if it still is. I think he quit being a hairdresser.
You know what? He still has the skills.
That's true. He does. He does.
And this bitch got lots of hair.
Am I wrong? Didn't they try that a little bit before? They tried to expand on Thomas's character with a short story. didn't they?
They may have. I've read most of the short stories, but not all of them. So
it wasn't a recent one. It was a couple.
I don't know. His short stories, he has the,
I freaking know.
Restoration of Faith, Vignette, Something Borrowed. That's Inside Jobs, Briefcases.
Briefcases is the anthology.
Right.
Yeah. Not that one.
So they did a Molly POV in Briefcases. I had to look it up because I couldn't remember. I didn't remember one from Thomas's perspective. In Inside Jobs, there's a Thomas one. There's a Thomas novelette, Thomas POV.
Yes.
Yeah, they did one from Thomas and they did one from Molly.
Yeah. So it was Side Jobs.
Yeah, I was just making sure Side Jobs had Thomas, Briefcases had Molly.
That's why I thought it was Side Jobs, because I swear I remember reading a Thomas perspective story at some point.
Yeah, yeah. So there's one with Side Jobs has a Thomas perspective, and Briefcases has a Molly perspective.
Yeah, so I knew there were a few, but I mean, I'm really curious to see what he does, because it really is unknown as of now, like, where that series is going to go and how it's going to end.
Yeah.
But I'm excited for the journey.
Mm-hmm.
All right, now for those of us that have been sitting here bored out of our mind, I'm looking at you, Smurf.
All right, so let's go into Marvel before we head over to the DC Universe and just go with something that we all knew was coming. And nobody at all is surprised, and that is that there is talk about Marvel going the same route that every other freaking movie studio has gone when a major actor has passed before their filming is complete, and that is CGI.
I mean, okay, first off, let's give him, our respect. It is very unfortunate that he died, and the cancer he died from was incredibly aggressive and really sad, because, it just kind of finally got much worse all at once, and when he passed, it was very unfortunate.
It was, and it is very sad, and Chadwick Boseman was an incredible actor and activist, and he had a lot of really powerful and promising things. And I think that the entertainment industry is really sad to be missing him.
Absolutely. And, he deeply is passing, deeply affected Marvel in fundamental ways.
Agreed.
The Avengers game expansion or update was delayed.
Wait, Stash, you're sounding like you're underwater.
Yeah, I'm getting robot.
God damn it. I thought I could lay down on the ground. Or is that better?
Nope.
Not yet.
You're broken.
I didn't do shit.
You laid down on the ground. You broke it.
What's wrong, Ben?
Nothing. God damn it. Well, talk.
Well, at this point, okay, so I'm not putting any stock in trade in this story whatsoever. At this point, everything I have seen has been rumors on so many different theories, fan theories, people just trying to fill the space. Because I also got on good authority that they were going to retire T'Challa, move on with his sister like they did in the comics, and bring her along as the replacement for Black Panther. I also heard that, they were going to do the X-Men crossover, bring in Storm, and start the City of the Dead storyline that attaches and have T'Challa die in that kind of revelation. It's all hearsay, and until we see an actual film or a script or they actually make a stand on it, I'm not buying this. This is just fluff.
I think we're getting both. I think they are going to continue the story, like you were saying. I think we're going to essentially have our Paul Walker, Carrie Fisher thing happening, where they're going to be in the story in parts.
Just enough to be like, hey.
They're no longer in the story.
Yeah.
And just briefly segue them out.
Yes, there's going to be probably, in this case, a death scene, I'm assuming. Explaining why he's no longer there.
Right, and you can have anyone underneath the mask.
Exactly. They'll do something. They'll put someone... I think they're going to do literally what they did with Carrie Fisher. There's going to be a stand-in of some kind, and then they're just going to digitize their image onto that person and have them do whatever, and then end scene.
And, you know, I'm kind of okay with that. At least they'll give him a proper departure instead of, like, all of a sudden he's just gone.
Be like, oh, he decided to give up the throne and go play basketball.
Yeah. Exactly.
No, I think there's going to be they have a lot of interesting ways they could possibly do it. That's why it seems like such a promising avenue for them, is that there is a lot of ways that they could make that happen.
Mm-hmm.
That would make sense in context of the story. So I fully see that actually playing out. And then, like you said, we're probably going to get the Shuri route, because it basically already said that.
Yep.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, do we want to talk about something that is more possible to be confirmed and really, really fucking stupid? And that is that there is talk about Wonder Woman 1984 skipping theaters and going straight to streaming.
Well, it's not necessarily stupid. It's necessary. Let's put it that way.
It's not.
It's unfortunately necessary at this point. They've spent so much money on all of their stuff that they've done so far. They've all their media stuff, all of their, you know.
I understand that, but they could still release it in select theaters as well as streaming. Because
well,
this is the.
Probably will.
That's probably what's going to happen. You're going to get a. Yeah.
Go ahead, Tate.
Go ahead.
Well, see, that's what
theaters have been doing, but the problem is theaters are not making money right now. It's like, if I haven't dragged my ass to the Alamo and I love that place, I mean, that's saying something. And, like, most movies that are in theaters are just making such a pittance right now that, I mean, why go through all the money of producing the copies and stuff like that and securing proper viewing and stuff like that? It's a lot of hassle and it's a lot of money that they may not make back.
I think they're still going to take that route. The only reason I think they're going to do the multi-format release is because it doesn't cost the production company anything at this point. They've already done all of their
spending.
You know, all their spending. They've spent all of their money. They've already done all of the movie stuff. They've already done all of the after, you know, so they've done all the, you know, movie tie-ins and all of that crap. They've already spent all of that money, so for them to send a copy to a movie theater isn't going to cost them extra. And the only thing that the only way the movie theater wouldn't do it is if they're already closing at this point.
Mm-hmm.
They have loss. There is no loss. The only thing that the theater could potentially gain some money, they don't have to pay extra to have the movie at this point. So they might as well.
Yeah, that's true. They probably already have all those lines
out in theaters in the hopes, and things just didn't work out.
Exactly. So it's probably going to be a multi-format release. It's going to be just like Bill and Ted, just like, you know, it's going to be, hey, you can stay at home and watch it, or you can go to the movie and watch it. There you go.
I know. I also wish that drive-ins would be, you know, would stay open later in the season. You know, so many close in September. And I feel like drive-ins are really, you know, like the way people are going these days, but so many have already closed for the season.
Yeah. Well, it's hard to do.
Not gonna happen, yeah.
Yeah, it's hard to do when there's rain and snow. And that's as, it's as simple as that. Like, and especially if you're in a place like Colorado where there is a distinct possibility that it's going to rain or snow at any given moment from now until May.
Shit, we already had our first snow this year. That was crazy.
Exactly. And it,
yeah, it was.
Like this, it's not going to... You might still see it in some places where it would be, there is more of a global climate. But in Colorado and a vast majority of the United States, you don't have that kind of climate.
I know. I'm just bitching the bitch.
Yeah. So
and you got Regal that shut everything back down. And yep. AMC is hemorrhaging money. They're not going to close. And they're saying by late 2020 or early 2021, they are going to be out of money. So they're looking at selling assets. So, I mean, we may just see, I mean, it's going to be weird, but I could honestly see, like, a return of old-school mom-and-pop theater shops.
Yeah.
You know, like, old-school theaters. That would be kind of cool.
The big national stuff is going to disappear. It can't live at this point. Yeah. If there is going to be any move towards theaters, I think you're right. It's going to be privately owned, small theater systems, you know, maybe somewhere in the vicinity of 2 to 4 screens, stuff like that. And it's going to be that way for a while, it's like, just because nobody... There's no safe way to get enough people into the theaters based on current restrictions and current guidelines. Yep. There's no safe way to get that many people into theaters to compensate for the amount of money they're losing. They don't make money off of... The movies, the ticket sales, they make no money on that.
Yeah.
So they're just hemorrhaging at this point. And AMC, their stock has dropped by another like 50% in the last 2 months. They're literally going completely broke at this point. The only one that has not at this point showed any massive losses is, I think, Cinemark. Is the only one that hasn't had the giant losses that Regal and AMC have had. So.
And didn't they stay open longer than anybody else?
Kind of.
Yes. Cinemark did stay open a little bit longer, and they, I guess their spending wasn't completely out of touch like every other major chain of theaters. So they're not losing money as wantonly as everyone else.
And they were also selling food after their theater closed. Like, they continued selling food from those places.
Yeah, because they all had their restaurants, they had their bars, they had other stuff that they could offer, and they were able to maintain some semblance. And it's also just the way... Honestly, a lot of it's the way they spent their money. Movie theaters, unfortunately, are a very small margin business in the grand scheme of things, and so many of the big companies like Regal and AMC just spent money nonstop. And then when there's no cash flow coming back in, the theater system was already dying, so at this point, it's a death knell for most theaters. Whereas with Cinemark, they didn't spend as much, and they were able to offer alternatives that didn't kill them. So, yeah. AMC and Regal are probably going to be gone by this time next year at the latest.
All right, well...
So, honestly,
that's a safe bet.
Okay. Movie theaters are dying, which is sad. Yeah. But we all kind of knew that this was coming. You know, but apparently new movies are still being made. And there is so much shit being talked about the new Cleopatra. So much shit. Fox, I know you had some things to weigh in on this.
Well, you know, The Big Fuss is about, you know, a white lady being cast as Cleopatra.
She's not white. She's Israeli.
So there are some very, very interesting points about this. Yeah, I was going to bring up, she is Israeli, and I think that that brings up a bigger question of, like, what is whiteness? And I think that that is such an incredibly complicated question to answer. I don't think I could go into it on this podcast, but I'll have to find Thought Slime. The YouTube channel Thought Slime actually did a really good video on, like, what is whiteness? But so Cleopatra herself was descended from the line of Ptolemaic pharaohs who came from Ptolemy of Greece, Macedonia to be more specific. And so we know that her father was quote unquote white. We don't actually know anything about her mother. But I think that a lot of people feel like this is erasure of, you know, African accomplishment.
Cleopatra was not of the dark African descent. Wonder Woman, or Gal Gadot, is Middle Eastern.
Well, and like you were saying, Cleopatra is Macedonian. Like, that, as far as we know, that's what she was. She was from that line of people. And this is the Rami Malek thing again, all over again. It's like, why can't King Tut be played by an Egyptian? It's like, well, you know, Rami Malek actually is Egyptian. Funny enough, he's light-skinned, but he's Egyptian. And it's the same thing. They're making a story out of nothing for some reason. It's like, you're messing... They're not messing with anything. They're not retelling a story. Whatever information we have available to us indicates that Cleopatra would have been of some fair to olive skin complexion.
Which Gal Gadot is.
Exactly.
And personally, I think Gal Gadot is better suited as the Cleopatra figure than Wonder Woman anyway.
I would like to say just that I still am not sure how to feel about this, and I'll have to spend some time mulling it over. I'm not really taking a side one way or another.
Mm-hmm. Understandable.
Is it... So, I mean, is it so bad that she's playing Cleopatra? I mean, I don't need to be ignorant or, like you, Fox, I'm kind of, I don't know how to feel, I don't know how to think on this. I think it's spectacular that they're doing a woman-empowered film, and that she's the focal point. I appreciate her skill as an actress, and I think that the project itself is a great leap forward in making films. So, I mean, it almost seems nitpicky that, like, okay, we're glad you're making a female-empowered film, but we don't like the female, you know? And I find that so incredibly, the hypocrisy of it. Like, what more do you want? I mean, and technically, she is, like you said, Israeli. She is... You know, she's not white, but, you know, she's a fairer complexion. So I'm kind of with you, Fox. I don't know. Why can't we just be happy that they're making a film about Cleopatra? Why do you guys have to just, like, why does everyone have to just immediately pick it apart? We haven't even seen it yet.
We really know nothing about this movie yet other than the casting and the director.
Yeah.
I think that I can understand, like, people of African descent feeling kind of cheated. Like, I think that makes sense to me.
That does make sense. But they're not being... How are they being cheated?
By not having someone of African descent portray, you know, someone who is, you know, an example of a powerful woman of African descent.
But she's not of African descent.
But she's not of African descent. You just said it. She's Macedonian.
Well, they found... I think I read that they found her sister's tomb and tested her DNA, and they think they can tell that her mother is of African descent.
And just because they were sisters, that doesn't mean they had the same mother.
I don't really know. I know that for the Ptolemies, they did a lot of incest. They did a lot of incest. Because that's how you kept power in the family, and they murdered each other a lot.
Right, but I'm just saying, like, just because, you know, everything we know about Cleopatra is that she was Macedonian. So, like, you know, things that we know to be true about her siblings do not hold to be true about her, because there were also, you know, concubines and, you know, whatnot. And, you know, the pharaoh could have children with people that were not his spouse.
And not just the pharaoh, kings in general at that point.
Yeah. And those children were still considered legitimate heirs as long as that ruler acknowledged them as children.
I don't
Shit,
know.
I mean, Julius Caesar dated Cleopatra while he was still married and, like, raised a giant gold statue of her in, like, his hometown.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I mean, I'm excited to see the film, but, like you, Fox, I don't know what to really think or... I'm kind of like, okay, well, sure.
So.
I guess I understand the perspective of being upset if it was a if the historical person in question was completely acknowledged as being of African descent, and we can say, oh yes, we have all this information saying that, then I could understand the
if Nelson question. Mandela was being played by Matthew McConaughey, definitely get angry.
Even if it was by Tom Hanks, I'd have an issue. So, you know, like, I could understand that. I could completely get that. But we're talking about a person that we, based on what we know about them, came from a, while probably mixed a little bit, culture, was predominantly fair-complected. Just like, you know, every other one from that area, from that. So we don't entirely know what they looked like, but we have an idea of what they probably looked like. And it wouldn't be dark skinned. It would be light skinned. It's, I don't know. I guess I just have an issue with the claim that it's like, well, she's Egyptian. She's a Egyptian by choice, not by birth.
Well, she was definitely born in Egypt, but.
I'm sorry, I said that incorrectly. I don't mean. She's Egyptian by birth, but I'm saying she's not Egyptian, like, that's where her family came from.
Yeah.
Her family came from somewhere else and then moved to Egypt. Her family line came from a different place. Because it I don't know. And
I get what you're saying, Tank.
It's just, I could be more, I guess I'd be more understanding of them questioning it if we had actual information that led that thought, but we don't. We don't have any information that leads us to believe that she was dark-skinned in any way.
You know, and that, we are going with someone who, and, well, we, I keep saying we, they are going with someone who is of Middle Eastern descent.
Exactly.
You know, it's not like it's going to, you know, Kristen Bell or something, who's, you know, this fair-haired, you know, very American actress who's also very talented but completely different.
But it is, I guess it does raise some interesting questions. Maybe we should look more into, I don't know how much further we could investigate it, into Cleopatra's origins to determine a skin color. That seems like it'd be fairly difficult at this point in time. that we haven't already figured out now.
Well, and I feel at this point that, I mean, there's really nothing that we could do about it. I mean, we can definitely do additional research and, you know, form more educated opinions. But, mm-hmm. you know, to be completely honest about it, like, I'm actually very glad that they're casting someone from a similar region. You know, as opposed to going with just, you know, your cookie cutter Hollywood.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, I think that she is not my ideal body type for Wonder Woman anyway. So we're not going to go into that story again, that tirade again. But I will say that I think that, you know, giving her that sultry, you know, can stop the world with a look kind of thing that Cleopatra was known for is something that will be a good fit.
God, when you said that, I got the theme song of Mary Tyler Moore stuck in my head now.
You're welcome. All right. Does anyone have anything else? Because that's all I had on my agenda.
Nope, I'm good.
Got nothing.
Nope. All right. That wraps it up for this week.
Yeah, that's everything.
Thank you for listening. Please like, please share. We are the Nerds That Know. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with the latest in Lord knows what, because it's the end of the world as we know it, yet we feel fine. In the meantime, run fast
for yourself
hard, and always be kind.